Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, a new old broadcast by radio great Gene Shepherd. Not Shep the comic satirist. This week, it's Shep the master storyteller. I hope you'll stay tuned. From time to time, New World Notes resurrects a voice from the past. A voice that is saying something still worth hearing. The voice of Howard Zinn, or Gore Vidal, for instance. And we've resurrected a voice or two belonging to people less brilliant than Zinn or Vidal, but who have made a good change in American culture. Such as radio great Gene Shepherd. And here we go again. In the late 1950s and the 1960s, Shepherd did a nightly, late-night 45 minutes live radio program on the powerful station WOR, AM and FM in New York. He improvised, he told stories, he intentionally butchered the commercials he was supposed to read. And when he was at his best, after 45 minutes, you realized that everything he had said was all connected. Shepherd had a range of styles and topics. I especially like his comic satires on American life. But he also told wistful and shrewd, non-satiric stories of his childhood in the Midwest and of his young adulthood. This week, a new old Gene Shepherd show, sliced and diced to fit our time slot, but classic Shepherd in his non-satiric storytelling mode. It was broadcast April 12, 1965. It's the story of two tornadoes Shep had witnessed, one close at hand and one very close at hand. Let's have a listen.
When I heard them talking about the tornadoes today, I thought, well, you know, maybe I ought to tell that story, the time that I was caught right in the track of a tornado. This is not exaggeration. You can't exaggerate a tornado. And when you live in a tornado belt, when you live in the tornado country, everybody has his own tornado stories. And strangely enough, many people who have lived in the tornado belts, right in the middle of where the tornadoes, maybe 40 or 50 of them a year hit, many people have never seen them, because a tornado sometimes will come whipping down out of the sky, and it will lash over an area of maybe a half a mile and do it all in the space of about 2 minutes and be gone. Just boom, and that's it. It's not a big operation like a hurricane, where Hurricane Donna or Hurricane Fred or Hurricane Myrtle can be predicted for days and days until finally it comes and it sweeps over a whole section of coast and so on. A tornado is something that is almost alive. In fact, the first thing you think of when you see a tornado is that it is some kind of animal. It's a curious kind of animal. And it's a huge animal, and it has its own sound, and it has its own smell, and it has a kind of breath that exists around it. And I remember the first time that I ever saw a tornado actually in operation. I'd heard about them. Everybody talked about tornadoes. A tornado was a big thing in The Wizard of Oz. Do you remember Dorothy was picked up by a tornado and carried to the land of Oz? And it's quite possible, I can see what Frank Baum was writing about, it's quite conceivable, because houses would be carried three counties when a tornado was really in full swing. And I remember a tornado day. I was sitting in a boat, in a rowboat, and it was a lake in southern Michigan. Now, the country has to be a special kind of country to create tornadoes. Usually, the country, oddly enough, is vaguely rolling. Tornadoes do not often hit, contrary to popular belief, in absolutely flat country. Now, it perhaps needs these little tiny hillocks, these little rolling hills, to break up the movement or the rush of air over the earth to create that strange little whirlwind, that insane maniacal animal that suddenly leaps. It comes down from the clouds. It doesn't go up. It comes down. And I remember we're sitting there, myself, my kid brother, and we're fishing for sunfish. And we're sitting at the far end of a soft, warm Michigan lake that was spring-fed, and it had that kind of, you know, that kind of smell that all these Michigan lakes have, a smell of warm water and turtle eggs, a kind of smell of mud and cattails and hot sun and paint, and you can smell hay off in the distance, and you can smell cows always. And when you sit on the edge of a Michigan lake, the smell of the cow is overpowering. And there was a herd of cows going up the hill right offshore, just where we were sitting. And we were sitting in about, we must have been in about 10 feet of water. And down below, as you could see, the weeds, great flat beds of lake weeds where we were fishing for sunfish. And it was a hot day. The temperature must have been, probably 90 degrees. Hot, muggy afternoon, and absolutely still. And we're sitting in our little boat. We're probably the only guys on the lake that day, just sitting there quietly. And surrounding the little bay where we were fishing was a farm, a complete farm. Just went all the way around. You could see the barbed wire fences, and you could see the haystacks crawling up, and this great herd of Guernsey cattle all quietly moving down, coming down the hills to drink. And over just near the edge of the top of the hill, we could see the farmhouse. Now, I know this country very well because we'd been going to this lake for about 5 years. I knew it like the back of my hand. And we're sitting there quietly. My kid brother is lying on the bottom of the boat, and nothing is happening. The fish are not biting. And I'm sitting at the other end where the anchor is. And once in a while, a little puff of wind would come across, skittering over that flat water. It was like a mirror, that little skittering of the wind. And then it's absolutely still. Not a sound. Nothing. It just lay there like that for about 5 minutes. The most peculiar sense of something ominous. Just like that. And way up off over in the east was a long, low bank of dark clouds. They had predicted rain, and it had rained a couple of times the day before, and it rained a little bit in the morning. You could see these dark clouds just sort of hanging there. Dark summer storm clouds, but they didn't look particularly evil, just dark clouds. And I'm sitting at the end of the boat, and Randy's down, laying flat on the bottom. Suddenly, nothing. Silence. And then, from the distance, we could hear the sound of a freight train. Now, this was not unusual, because there were railroad tracks around there. There were tracks that went, little spur tracks and one thing and another that led to the small towns in the area. And we heard this freight train, but it was a freight train that must have been going 90 miles an hour. You could hear this. And suddenly I notice, I'm sitting at the end of the boat, I notice off over the hill, I notice this long black finger waving, coming down out of the clouds and waving. Just like it was looking for something, just a long, thin ribbon that just, it's like a snake hanging from a curtain rod. And it was flicking like it was alive. And this fantastic roar, and then, boom, she went straight down and began to flick on the other side of the hill. It must have been a half a mile from us. And the lake was absolutely dead silent. Not a wave, not a ripple on the water. And we saw that thing move in a kind of counterclockwise direction away from us. It was moving first towards us and then away from us. Off it went. It took maybe a minute and a half. I said, Randy, take a look at that. And Randall got up and he looked, and we could see this cloud of dirt and debris rising from the base of this thing, which was just over here. We couldn't see the actual tip of it, but we just see things flying. And this great roar, this roar, just exactly like a freight train. You could even hear the wheels. You could hear the click of the ties. And she just went off over in the direction, and we knew where it was going. There's a little town that we went to buy worms and to buy bait and to buy bread and to buy cracker crumbs for the fish And once in a while, we'd go in there to buy a fishing license or a cane pole or a bobber, a little town called Comstock, Michigan. And she was heading right, we knew exactly where it was. They were about 3/4 of a mile on the other side of the hill. And sure enough, we hear this. There's a long, shuddering sound that sounded something like somebody running along a fence with a stick. It went, and we're rowing like, man, we got to get out of here. We're rowing. Any minute now, it's going to come back and get us. And there was a great gray cloud hung where Comstock, Michigan was, and it disappeared. Just up it went. And we saw this cloud, which looked something like what we call today an atomic bomb mushroom cloud. It hung there for, it just hung in the air. And we could see things just coming down, drifting down. We must have been a mile and a half away from where the tornado hit the town of Comstock, Michigan, and almost instantaneously, it just seemed like everything all happened at once, you could hear the sound of people. It was a quiet, remember this is Michigan countryside, you could hear people screaming. Just off in the distance, you could hear this scream, just a long, like it sounded like a lot of birds. It sounded like birds. Some kind of little starlings. You could just hear them. You knew it was people. And we're rowing like mad. We must have had a half a mile to row back to the dock. And by the time we got about halfway back, of course, people had all come out from the cottages. You could hear the people running. You could see cars going up over the hills. And from the distances, you could already begin to hear the sound of sirens coming from the other towns all around there. And half an hour later, we finally got back to the shore and into the car, and we drove into Comstock, Michigan, and it was unbelievable. The entire town had disappeared. Now, this town was a town of about 2,000 people, I'd say. There must have been couple of hundred, 300 houses. There was an Esso station and, you know, things like that. There was a little A&P and a Kroger's and a little feed store and a hardware store. Just a little town. The entire town, I'm telling you, the entire town was flattened. Just flattened. And what was left was nothing but the bases of the houses, floors. And in the middle, you'd see a piano sitting there. Or there would be a foundation, and there would be a chair, nothing else. Why this chair, I don't know. It would be a chair. And all the wires were down, the trees were down, and of course there were tremendous a number of casualties, but immediately the Red Cross was there. But I'll never forget that instantaneous, was almost like a giant bomb hit this town, and all in the space of not more than 2 or 3 minutes. No way to get out. Absolutely no way to escape. Nor was there a way to predict it. Now, I'll tell you a story of a personal recollection where I was literally caught right in the path of one of these things, and it all happened in maybe 45 seconds, no more. And this came a couple of years later. And I'm working in the steel mill. Now, when you're in a mill, when you're in a gigantic industrial complex, you're always a little on edge anyway. You're always a little bit on edge because of the fantastic machines. Give me a little machine music there. Oh, boy. You just feel that, you know, when you're working in the middle of a refinery, or you're working in the middle of a steel mill or a great coal mine. You feel forces around you that any minute now are going to completely overwhelm you, inundate you, without any reason, rhyme, or sense. It's always with you. The sound of that tremendous AC generator roaring down there, 200 yards away, turning out a million kilowatt hours. Oh, you can feel it. And those open hearts, breathing flame, and those fantastic blast furnaces reaching up into the sky, and the darkness and the oil. You just feel it all around you. It's just there. And you know that, and you always expect it to come from the machine. You expect the blast furnace to blow up, and it does occasionally. You expect the open hearth to blow a cork, And it does occasionally. Let me tell you about that some night. If you're really interested in the story of an explosion in the open hearth, I happened to see one day that I will never forget to my dying day. It was one of the great and scary sights of my entire industrial life. It was the time that somebody they charge open hearths from what they call charging cars that move along the open hearth floor and charge this open hearth. Now, if you can imagine, the open hearth is a kind of a big oven that is a cooker. It cooks the metal, you see, and they put various types of ingredients. I'm simplifying it, manganese and silicon and so forth. And as they charge these ovens, they charge them just the way a lady is putting ingredients of a cake into a batter, and she puts it into the oven. Well, somebody somewhere along the line had left a dynamite cap back at the mine where this particular ingredient, I don't know whether it was silicon or manganese, where this particular ingredient was mined, an unexploded dynamite cap was left in this charge. And so they pushed the charge in. I must have been about a block and a half, a city block and a half away, just going along, running like mad, delivering my mail, when suddenly there was this shudder. You know, when you hear an explosion, you don't really hear an explosion. You feel it at first. You just go, you just felt this. And you knew something had happened because it was totally out of the experience of the kind of noises you get to know, like a man who drives a car for years or a truck. You know all the real sounds. You know the healthy sounds. And the minute one sound that seems probably to a lot of other people just another one of the big sounds, you know when something happened. You were... And I turned around and I saw this blast furnace, the wall of the blast furnace had just caved out. And this great wave of molten lava was pouring out, and this huge, enormous tongue of gas flame was going all the way across the floor, and I saw these people spreading out, running as fast as they could run. But that's another story. And so you're expecting this kind of thing. You know, you're always kind of expecting something to fall down on you or something to explode. And here I was running through the old mill, what they call the old number one mill, which was built earlier than the new mill. The mill was divided into two or three sections. And this is like the old town. It's like being down in the Bowery or someplace, you know, one of the older parts of New York. And this part of the mill was all jammed together. It was all dark corners and great high dark walls and high tension wires and boxcars and all tanks and enormous conveyance tracks and everything all jammed together. It's like being under an enormous kind of elevated with all sorts of great shuttering machines on all sides of you. And I am running through this part of the mill about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was about this time of the year, incidentally. It was early spring, just about this time of the year. And you know how when you're working along and you're involved in something and it's totally involving, you know, you're sorting the mail or whatever it is your job is, you get so that your mind is kind of out to lunch. You know, you're just involved in your work. You're working like mad and nothing else is involving you. You know, you're just going. So I'm running along next to a boxcar, right next to this boxcar, which in turn was not more than a foot and a half or 2 feet away from this gigantic shed, this enormous metal, iron, corrugated iron shed, a mill. It was really the 14-inch merchant mill. And she was laying right up against this boxcar, a whole string of boxcars. And old Shep is running along these boxcars. And off to my left was the AC plant, and the Ford shop was off to my left. And I had maybe, 65 or 70 feet between me and the next buildings. And all around me were these high-tension wires bringing in this high-tension voltage into the mill. And I'm running along, sorting my mail. When all of a sudden, out of the blue, without any warning, I hear an alien noise. An alien noise. It's a train coming. Strange noise. I hear like that. And something inside of me, maybe it was because of my earlier experience with the tornado, in Michigan, something inside of me, like an overload relay, went, it kicked over, and I ducked up against the side of this freight car. I just sort of hung up against it. I looked around, waiting to see what was going to happen. I thought maybe there was a train coming, something was exploding, something was blowing up in the mill. I could hear the ground is sort of shutting, and suddenly, over the building, directly in front of me, coming right at me, is a tornado. Vroom. She just roared right over, just vroom, and I grabbed the hold of the side of this freight car. Now, you know those climbing irons on the freight cars they have that you climb up to the top with, those things for your feet? I hung on to those two climbing irons, and I plastered myself up against them. I just hung there and held on with my face to the car, just hung on. And this thing went, I could hear the air shuddering. And she just went right over the building, not more than maybe, 40 or 50 feet away from me. And believe me, that is much too close to a tornado. I can tell you that. And I looked up, and I saw the roof of the building, which must have been, maybe 6 or 7 stories high, is literally being peeled off like leaves. It's peeling off these fantastically big sheets of corrugated iron, and they are just disappearing. They're going zing, zing. They're disappearing. Woo, woo, woo. They're sailing off like cards off into the distance. I don't know what these things could have done had they hit anybody. It just cut them right in half. But zing, they were going. And the tornado has now moved over the building, and I can hear this thing just wrenching. Have you ever heard a building groan? The building is just going, ooh! I heard this thing screaming. She went right across the courtyard, and every last one of the high-tension wires and the high-tension poles came down like they were made out of balsa wood. Have you ever seen high-tension wires coming down with 30,000 volts? Let me tell you, it cannot be described. These transformers, one of them had a transformer, not more than 100 feet away from me. One had a transformer that must have weighed a ton and a half. One of these great big tank transformers. She just dropped. Boom! And landed right on a brand new Ford that was sitting there, a company Ford. Just boom! And the Ford blew up. And I'll tell you, it had hit the fan. And you know what it was that had hit the fan. I could not believe it. And at first, I thought it was an air raid. I couldn't imagine what it was. It didn't hit me right away. This is a tornado. It was as though something, some cataclysmic, some unbelievable force had hit everything. And then she just moved right across the number 2 AC shop, took the roof right off of it, and I saw more high-tension wires go down, and then silence. Just boom. And all you could hear then was the sound of things falling. And you could hear people. Again, you always hear people. There's always people caught under things. There are people pushed under things. There are people who have been hit. And one thing, and I hung on the edge of that freight car. I just hung to that freight car. And by the way, the freight car, during all of this thing, started to move down the track sideways. She was just absolutely moved. She must have moved 15 feet. And I just hung to the side of that son of a gun and wouldn't let go. And I looked around, and I had a bag of mail. These are the strangest things that happen in tornadoes. I had a bag of mail. I had a regular mailman sack around me, a big leather sack. And it had a top on it, you know, a regular cover that you flip over and all this. There wasn't one single piece of mail, and I must have had probably 1,000 pieces of mail in there, company plant mail and all. There wasn't one single piece of mail left in that sack. Just gone. Where it went, I have no idea. To this day, I don't know. But I'll never forget the fantastic surprise. That's the first feeling that you have, is one of unbelievable surprise. And then it's all over so quickly. It is all over so quickly that it's as though it just didn't happen. And then after that, there is the next feeling, is the feeling of disbelief. You can't believe it. Well, I ran around the back, and of course by now things were burning, and you could see the half of the plant, half of this building was knocked down, and the wires had come down, and fires had been started because of the high tension wires and one thing and another. And I ran around the back, and there, sitting behind the other side of the building, was the truck that was waiting to pick me up, and he had no idea this had happened. That's the curious thing about tornadoes. I came running around the side of the building screaming bloody murder. Hey, George! A tornado! Everybody's killed! Help! And he looked at me like I was out of my mind, and he wasn't more than, I'd say, probably at the most, a block away from it. He just didn't know that it happened. So these tornadoes, this one incidentally came right out of the lake. It came right off of the lake. The lake wasn't more, I'm talking about Lake Michigan here, the lake wasn't more than, maybe 75 yards from where she hit. And, of course, there are a lot of theories about that, the difference in the temperature between the water and the temperature of the air and one thing and another that create tornadoes. But if you've ever lived in the tornado area, if you've ever lived around where tornadoes are, you know something about the fear of an atom bomb, because a tornado is very much like that. A tornado does, when there's nothing that can stand up in its path, and the things that do stand up in its path are incongruous. Just as pictures that you might have seen of an atom bomb going off, some crazy thing will be standing there. A vase will be untouched, you know. Or somebody's glass greenhouse will be untouched, and the steel mill will be blown up. You know, it's peculiar. And that is the way a tornado works. There are thousands and thousands of stories. I remember one incident regarding a tornado. You know, there's always the story of the straw being driven through the 6-inch pine board, that kind of thing. Well, I have my own version of that. For some unknown reason, my hat disappeared. Well, I had one of these hard hats, you know, these hats that they give you. This is one of these, like a construction hat. And this is the kind of hat that we used. My hat came back to me. Somebody brought it back to the mill. And my hat was found 7 miles away from the steel mill. Had my name in it and everything. My hat, it just disappeared and took off. And I had no idea that it was gone. I didn't realize it until maybe 3 or 4 hours later that my hat was gone. But the hat just simply, whoop, it was gone. It was found 7 miles away. And somebody who found it thought that was so remarkable that they brought it back to the mill. And so everybody's got his favorite tornado story. And all I got to say is if a tornado ever hits the Bronx will know why those gimlet-eyed people come from the Midwest.
And to the ever-tacky strains of Eduard Strauss, Shep's theme song, we end our fifth tribute to radio great Gene Shepherd. In this 1965 broadcast, we heard not Shep the social satirist, but Shep the master storyteller. You can download this and a zillion other installments of our show at no charge from our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes. Also advising illegitimi non-carborundum, 5440 or fight, excelsior, and please tune in again next week. See you later.